evening, good morning, good afternoon. I am Jason, and I am not here with Steve today, but I am here with a friend of mine for a change.
Nice.
Thanks. Tim Kemper is a very nice guy, and he is, well, I guess I'll let him tell you. I'll probably fill in the details a little later. We can banter a bit, Tim, before I get to the poem. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Tim?
Sure. Very happy to be here. And Jason and I met during our master's program, and we became good friends. And I started listening to this podcast to kind of keep up with his own ramblings and see what's going on. But, you know, education is something that I've always been interested in. Both my parents were in education as teachers and writers. When I graduated college, I got a job at an educational publishing company, and I did that for a number of years, and I'm still doing that now. But I got the itch eventually to actually get in the classroom. You know, I kind of thought that, you know, if I'm going to be writing materials for classrooms, it's kind of not fair if I don't actually have real classroom experience. So that was, you know, that was my decision to go get my master's. And then, so Jason and I were in the same program, and now I am an adjunct instructor at a university teaching writing. And, you know, I'm still pretty green at it, but I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So thank you so much, Tim. That was really good. The, so sort of just briefly, your BA is journalism, is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. Okay. And then MA, like me, English,
sure.
Yay, English. Okay, sweet. So, all right, good deal. This is maybe not super relevant, but this is just, out of curiosity, 'cause I don't have this detail about you and I'd like to, for the publishing company that you're working with and have been working with, is it mostly curriculum development that you've been doing historically?
Yeah. Well, the tradition of the company has written writing handbooks for English classrooms. So,
gotcha.
You know, you have sections on the writing process, different genres within, you know, different essay forms. And then some sort of critical thinking chapters and reading skills, a vocabulary. And then at the back, you have your kind of like grammar. So you have your handbook. But, you know, we've changed a little bit since things have gone online. Still do writing resources. Now a lot of them are online, and we try to do little mini lessons. So we do like curriculum things. So we have teacher's guides to go with everything.
Wow.
And then we've also been doing some social, emotional learning, some materials for that as well. So,
okay. So kind of running the gamut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Nice. Okay. Good deal. Well, Tim has come onto the back porch in an effort to discuss a question that he has posed. And Tim, I'm going to pull it up here because I thought that you asked it very well. So here it is. Your question was, where is the line between scaffolding and handholding? Okay. I'm going to enjoy this conversation for sure. I would like to start it, as I often do, with a poem. I don't know if I've read this poem on the podcast before or not. Don't tell Steve, but I actually only know like 15 poems. So
I don't.
I just reuse the same ones. but this one is by Lee Hunt, who he's not a super well-known poet, but this one is called The Glove and the Lions, and it's a lot of fun, and I think it has something to do with motivations, which is where I want to start when it comes to scaffolding versus handholding. So that's why I want to start our conversation with this. Additionally, it's just a fun one. So, okay, The Glove and the Lions by Lee Hunt. King Francis was a hardy king and loved a royal sport. And one day as his lions fought, sat looking on the court. The nobles filled the benches, and the ladies in their pride, and amongst them sat the Count de Lorge, with one for whom he sighed. And truly, 'twas a gallant thing to see that crowning show, valor and love, and a king above, and the royal beasts below. Ramped and roared the lions, with horrid laughing jaws. They bit, they glared, gave blows like beams. A wind went through their paws. With wallowing might and stifled roar, they rolled on one another, till all the pit with sand and mane was in a thunderous smother. The bloody foam above the bars came whisking through the air. Said Francis then, "Faith, gentlemen, we're better here than there." De Lorge's love o'erheard the king, a beauteous lively dame, with smiling lips and sharp bright eyes, which always seemed the same. She thought, "The count, my lover, is brave can be. He surely would do wondrous things to show his love of me." "King, ladies, lovers, all look on. The occasion is divine. I'll drop my glove to prove his love. Great glory will be mine." She dropped her glove to prove his love, then looked at him and smiled. He bowed, and in a moment leapt among the lions wild. The leap was quick, return was quick. He has regained his place. Then threw the glove, but not with love, right in the lady's face. "By God," said Francis, "rightly done." And he rose from where he sat. "No love," quoth he, "but vanity sets love a task like that."
Very nice.
Yeah, it's some a fun
great,
little
yeah,
story.
Yeah, great imagery in there too.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you've given a better contribution. You're much more encouraging than Steve. I'm going to have to keep you around.
Oh man, no. I am curious though. Where you see the connection here with scaffolding. Okay. I want to see this.
Sure.
I like it.
So it's not super strong. Don't come expecting too much. But it's this idea of love and vanity that I'm really holding on to, because the line between scaffolding and hand-holding, right? I'm going to open up this can of worms, but then I'm just going to back away from it, and maybe we can get back to it later. But the first can of worms that I'm going to open is like, does one of them have to be bad? Right. Mm-hmm. Or could it be that each has its place? I think ultimately I'm going to argue the latter, right? That scaffolding or handholding, that each of those things, is a skill or a technique that a good teacher will employ in the right situation.
Yep.
But sometimes when I am wondering about this question, or when I'm I don't know that I've articulated it this way, but when it comes to handholding, when I say that, it's more of a vanity on my part, right? Like it's something that is said in exasperation, in frustration. And I know myself just well enough to know that I'm not always the most charitable person, right? And so I've tried to really re-examine my own assumptions when it comes to when I'm accusing, or when I'm saying of myself about my students, man, I'm really having to do a lot of handholding. You know, one of the things that I've learned to do is say, "Well, Jason, is it because you've given them a task too hard, or is it because you're being too exacting just because you like something that isn't really that important?"
Sure.
I don't know. So that's the connection. Will you let me get away with it?
No, definitely. And okay. I think it does have something to do. Yeah. That idea of vanity, for the teacher, her or his self. I mean, you put this sort of work into whatever it is, and you're, in terms of scaffolding, you're trying to build these sort of steps up to the final, whatever that product is. And mm-hmm. yeah, when you get to a point where you don't maybe see the students engaging or doing whatever it is that you wanted them to, it is easy then to sort of, well, I did all this work and you just, you know. So yeah, it does come back a little bit, I think, to the teacher too, and being able to reflect then honestly about your sort of lesson mm-hmm. plan or whatever, I think would be helpful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. So I think you're right that reflection is going to be a big part of it. And like you said, part of it is in the teacher. I'm suspecting then that you're going to want to say that part of it too is in the student or the curriculum, or do you have more thoughts on this?
I think part of it would be in the curriculum for sure. So what spurred this idea is I was listening to your previous episode. If everybody has not listened to that one, go back and listen to it, where the question was asked, where's the line between overestimating and underestimating your students?
Right.
I think this is like kind of tied to that. And, you know, mm-hmm. to me, when I was thinking about it after asking the question is that, I don't know, maybe this is obvious, but when you present a sort of lesson or something as a one size fits all, of course, not all the students are going to learn in that fashion or succeed right. in the way that you want them to. So, in that case, perhaps there does need to be some handholding, and not in a derogatory sense, in a good mm-hmm, sense, mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. try to lift up those other students, present the material in a new way, or be more direct or, you know, with them. So yeah, that's what I was thinking about at least.
Right. So, okay, good deal. Let me ask you then kind of when it comes to you being in the classroom now. And so a little bit of backstory, for our listeners, Tim and I, were a small part of developing a curriculum for the first year composition that we now teach as adjuncts. And we had that privilege when we were teaching assistants at the university. So at UMSL, University of Missouri, St. Louis. And so that was fun. And so we've been able to, that was fun. That's what I just said. That was fun.
It was fun, but it was also but a lot it wasn't of work.
Only fun. Yeah. Yeah. It was a tremendous amount of work. It was really rewarding in a lot of ways. But I was hurrying past that because what I wanted to say is that we, in having those conversations, we were also alongside of that curriculum reboot, we were in the class teaching the course that we were designing. And so I know a little bit about your teaching experience, Tim, and you know, there's more between us than we can sort of say all in a single episode here. But
sure.
I want to ask you about the idea of let's hone in on, eventually we're going to have to get down to it and say, well, what's scaffolding and what's
handling? Yeah, I guess we have to distinguish those.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But if we can hold it off for just a minute and, yep. And let me ask you instead, can you think of a time when you did handholding well? Or can you think of a certain part of the curriculum where that sort of thing shows up more? Like you're kind of looking at your curriculum going, yeah, there's going to be some handholding here.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that...
Yeah, sorry to put you on the spot.
No, man. No, no. For me, it comes down to when you're teaching writing, for me, like the sort of the really individual coaching that goes on is in the feedback that you give to a student that's already written something. So what do you give back to them?
Right.
And that's where I do think that's where the fine line between handholding and whatever else it is happening. And we get such a range of students. They're being introduced to this new world of sort of university life, new writing values. So some students are just, to me, they express it. They just feel lost.
Sure.
And in that case, I do get pretty granular with some bits of feedback. Okay. I'll focus on, not like four or five different skills, cause that's going to be way too overwhelming. Right.
Yeah.
But I'll try to focus on one or two skills and I'll do it throughout the paper. And I do feel like, at times maybe I'm going overboard with that. Maybe that's too much and maybe it's even too overwhelming, but I have seen in some students, they get something by the end of it that they're at least attempting to make some sort of writing move or thinking move, that I can see them doing it. And that to me is good handholding. Right. I would say.
Yeah. Okay, good. I think that you're right to point to feedback, sort of your written feedback, on a student's writing. I don't know that I would have located it there, but when you say that now, I'm thinking about my own feedback and I'm thinking, really, that is where I spend my time. I feel like I can be the most surgical, maybe,
yes,
with a student, right? Like, no, what I'm saying is exactly this, right? And not to say that you're wrong, but like I don't feel in that moment the need to speak generally, right? I can say, student, in writing, typically the convention is this, and so what that would look like in this instance is for you to modify this sentence in this way.
Yeah. Giving that example, I do that as well.
Okay.
And I always try to give a reason why it is this way, or like why this convention exists. What it's asking you to do as a student. And then maybe I'll give an example. But yes,
which is pretty exhausting.
It's so exhausting, and it can be get too much. Especially, if you're in high school and you have a load of, 100 students, to get that granular is really tough.
Right.
And
it's
then,
just so rewarding. That's the thing, right?
And this gets back to your poem. idea, as a teacher, I am like very much rooting for my students to do well. And, there is a fine line between that handholding feedback that I think is valuable, generative, that we're just talking about here, and then sort of, you yourself as the instructor sort of taking the ownership of the student's essay. And that's what you don't want, right?
Yeah.
Or their own learning. Right. We don't have to talk about essays here. This can be any number of skills, right?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it would work just as well in math class, right?
Yes.
When you get pedantic, okay, I like this. We're kind of easing our way into some definitions here. So we haven't defined handholding exactly or scaffolding, but we at least now are kind of developing a sense of when handholding is good and when it's not. And what we've, I think, said is that when you get pedantic, when you get very I don't know, just egocentric maybe.
Yeah.
That's when hand-holding can really, really turn south. You know, it can really be a bad thing.
Right. And you're not helping out the student. You're also not helping out yourself because you're using a lot of time and energy to do that. And it's just not, it's just wasted, right?
Yeah, exactly. All you're doing is proving that you're awesome to yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I should hope so. Right. Like you've been paid to instruct someone who obviously does not understand this or they're not expected to understand it to the same level that you are. It's not an accomplishment for you to be better at it than they are.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Good deal.
So I am curious where were you thinking when you thought about handholding, and maybe that will help you or us define it.
Right. Okay. So I thought about handholding in my curriculum, actually. Right. So as I am kind of laying out the units, or I'm laying out the big ideas, then I handholding to me, the immediate place that I think of it is very particular skills, where I know, like, it's the sort of thing where you say, forget about everything else that's going on right now. You've got to get this. That's a sort of, in my mind, that's a hand-holding, move, right? Like it's not scaffolding any longer at that point. Got it.
Yeah. I could see that.
Good. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know if that's so. I'll go first when it comes to,
that's the fine line though. I mean, that's the fine line we're talking about.
I think so. Scaffolding. When it comes to the end, right, the goal, I think that for scaffolding, it's aimed at something bigger, and the tasks that the students are completing are component parts of a larger goal.
Yes.
Whereas with handholding, it's like, no, this is the goal.
Yes.
Like, this is what we're doing. Now, later, are we going to do something else with it? Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully. Mm-hmm. If I'm a good teacher, we will, right? And so in a sense, I guess that is part of scaffolding. But handholding is like when whatever we're on, that's the thing.
Yeah, you're saying is it's completely, you know, you're inflexible, that you do not take some of those natural diversions that may in the end help you scaffold whatever it is better than your idea for what that exact thing that they needed to get out of this is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what about scaffolding for you? Is there a place where in your curriculum you think scaffolding, you see yourself doing it well, or there's a natural place that, like, in your teaching life that you see it popping up?
I think that in terms of the curriculum that we're teaching, or I think there is, we built in some pretty nice scaffolding to build up into this sort of larger essay that the students are asked to write. And there are sort of mini low stakes assignments built within that writing process of that bigger essay, where there's some real practice going on that is directly related to the sort of prompt that they're asked to do at the end. And those, to me, that it works pretty well, because not only are they getting the practice, and then they're getting the feedback that I kind of referred to earlier. So you're getting some coaching, but then you're also able to then use whatever skills you have, you know, there, you can go out and you use them with sort of the feedback in the back of your mind. But I'm always trying to, allow my students to retain the ownership of their work and to, you know, do the unique, crazy things that they're thinking of. Cause that's, those are the exciting moments for sure.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And that, so that's a huge, benefit to scaffolding, right? Is that it does not normalize everything, right? When you have something super rigid, then if a student has not had the time and space to work, with the pieces or ideas that, that he or she wants to work with, then, you know, they're really in a situation where they basically have to do what you're saying exactly the way you're saying it. And it has a norming effect that makes for boring reading of yeah. many essays, frankly. Yes. Right? Okay. Yeah, good point. I think that's a big time benefit of scaffolding. There was something else that I was thinking about when it comes to a benefit of scaffolding, other than the sort of, it was, remember our good old buddy, Mike Rose.
Sure.
His article on, writer's block, like that his, essentially the argument was that writer's block is what we say we have when we are so arrested by unfamiliar conventions
yes.
that we don't know how to proceed.
Yes.
I think
and this
that
is what a lot of our students are dealing with, right?
Yeah.
That idea right, of absolutely. You entering the university for the first time.
Right.
And that whole, all the conventions of that, not just in the classroom, but everything that goes along with it. It can be overwhelming right. for sure.
Oh, dude. I mean, I'm not even sure that the classroom is the most overwhelming part of becoming a college student, you know, like,
right.
And it's pretty overwhelming. But there's just so much that they're, being thrown into. Hey, maybe we can get, another, weaving of the mm-hmm. poem here, right? They're being thrown into the lion's pit of sorts.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to work through that. And so when a student has low stakes writing assignments that you as the instructor, know, is headed toward a larger goal and they, eventually know that as well. It allows them the freedom to see what there is to see rather than, hurry up and hammer it out for a satisfactory grade.
Right. Yeah. And they do eventually, you need to make that point known that, the types of thinking, writing they're doing here is going to come, it's going to come to fruition when they're doing their larger essay. And in fact, you can use these ideas in your larger essay,
right.
expand on them, keep going with them.
Right.
But I think those moments of, I do think that me personally, I need to express something in a better way to allow or encourage students, you know, to take those chances in those sort of low stakes environments. And I got to do a better job of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I struggle here too, just in terms of like, how do you do it? Because immediately the thought that comes to mind is show them examples, right, of other students writing.
Yeah.
Because, hey, look at this crazy thing that this person did. But as you and I both know, having gone through grad school, there is a, or at least I felt it in grad school, there is the sort of imposter syndrome that everyone talks about.
I definitely felt it.
Yeah, that just that feeling of I'm the dumbest person in the room. And everyone else knows so much more than I do. You know, so if you show a freshman, hey, here are these three totally crazy things that someone tried, I think that it would be pretty understandable if that student felt like, well, man, I can't do that. You know, like,
right.
This is, I would, in 10 lifetimes, I would never think up that.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, oh, man, I know that opposite feeling. Effect. Right.
But as you say, when we talk about scaffolding, if you don't provide enough of the support, then that sort of overwhelming feeling is just going to consume that student.
Mm-hmm.
And you're never going to, you know, you're never going to get what you, you know, what you want out of that student from that course. So scaffolding needs to be involved, clearly. And maybe, let's say it maybe even handholding for some students.
Sure. Sure. Okay. So, okay. The way that you phrased that made me think if there's something else to this in terms of scaffolding, handholding, that scaffolding is something that you're planning on doing for everyone.
Good.
And that handholding is sort of as needed.
That's great.
Like that through the course of the semester, I may hold each student's hand on a certain task, but that it's not going to be the same task.
Yeah.
That's you see what I mean?
That's a wonderful way to think about it. So you build your scaffolding in your curriculum design, but then you are sort of open and expecting, you know, that you're going to have to do some individual work / handholding. You won't know when until you actually get into it, right? And it's it's going to differ depending on the student.
Yeah. So the more that we talk about it, the more actually that I am coming to think that these metaphors of scaffolding and handholding are like, I didn't choose these words. I don't think that you chose these words with like a great deal of reflection on the metaphor.
No.
Before. Yeah. It's just sort of like, this is what we say. But that these metaphors are actually ringing, pretty true. Like they're really standing up to a bit of scrutiny here, right?
Yeah.
That scaffolding is this sort of more distant, more structural, thing. And that handholding really is more, we'll say relational or certainly closer. And not, I don't know, what do you think? A group activity? Potentially. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a really, and I gotta say, your poem somehow, the idea of vanity, that helps me distinguish in my own teaching the difference between good handholding, positive, generative handholding, and the sort of, you're just doing this because you want yourself to look good as an instructor.
Right. Right. Right.
And I'm guilty of that before. I've done it before.
Oh, for sure. Dude, I am so guilty, man. I hear you. Yeah. That's a big one. That it's very, especially when it comes to like observations, which I mean, we weren't observed a ton or whatever, but you know, even in reporting back, or when we're all reading one another's students' essays, right, for our grading calibration meetings and all that, you know, you're looking at it and you're like, I mean, this student's work, I don't know how much should I say that it is a reflection of me.
Mm.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, let's say this, whatever else we say, we could probably say that the very best parts that we want to attribute to us, we probably have embarrassingly little to do with those parts. And it's those, it's the rough edges that we see but haven't yet been through the handholding process enough, or we missed a chance to scaffold that in. Those are really the parts that we're slow to take ownership of. Those are probably the ones that we could have affected the most.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I think it's been useful though to think about. Right. The same thing applies if you're teaching one-on-one in a homeschool environment. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much of that scaffolding work do you want to put in ahead of time, knowing that maybe at some point that one-on-one interaction, generative handholding is going to need mm-hmm. to happen. And that's one of the mm-hmm. benefits, I think, of that environment.
Yeah, for sure. If that's the situation you find yourself in, man, I think that pivoting to that scenario reveals something for both it and a more contemporary classroom setting. Like what you just said, sort of scaffolding is done on the front end.
Yeah.
And it is something that you essentially build it and walk away, right? Not never to return, but that you take a step back. And scaffolding, handholding, I think these things have to do potentially with expectations.
Yes.
You know, like with our daughters, you know, we both have daughters who are just barely of school age.
Yep.
And there are tasks that we think our daughters can complete without our help. There are tasks that we think we do not expect that they will be able to complete without some very close and direct attention.
Absolutely.
Right. And I wonder if that's another sort of part of it. That scaffolding is like when you're looking big picture, like, yeah, they'll be able to bust out these two pages. They'll be able to give constructive feedback via peer review. They'll be able, you know, you're sort of expecting that the students will have an ability to complete the task, whereas handholding is like, I can't assume that you know how to do this, and so I'm going to step in here.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I know. Then I'm thinking about my own daughter. And then there's those moments where I really have to resist from getting involved. Like, you got to take it easy and just let her do her thing here and give it a try. Which is usually the right move.
Yeah.
So there's those moments of, again, surprise in there. And mm-hmm. actively, sometimes it's actively taking your hand out of the cookie jar, just letting the child or student or whatever it is, do their thing.
Yeah. So say more about that. Why does it seem to you that that's usually the right move? I mean, my experience agrees, from my experience, I agree with you on that. But why do you say that?
When you have a young parent or a young child, it's usually like, you're just trying to keep them safe. You don't want the scrape knee, yada, yada. And letting that person go and seeing that, you know, they're much more capable than you may in your own mind think that they are. And usually in the end, even if you end up with that sort of scraped knee or whatever, it's just a scraped knee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right.
Neosporin, Band-Aid.
Yeah.
We're good.
An attempt was made. I mean, it's like riding a bike, right?
Yeah, you're gonna, sure.
You got to fall a couple times. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, and so here we are back at estimation, right?
Yes.
Overestimating versus underestimating.
Yes.
So, yeah, man. Well said. Typically, releasing the child, the student, to sink or swim. They'll very often surprise you at how well they're able to swim. Yeah, man.
As long as you have something built in beforehand, right?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
To get that scaffolding.
You don't
want to
drop them off.
Yeah.
Right. You want to. Swimming sort of toward a goal, I guess. Man, I really don't know how much I want to pick up the swimming metaphor.
No, that could go crazy.
Yeah, but right, that scaffolding is an important part of skill development. Okay, so all right, man. I thought I felt myself landing the plane. I felt like I was going to a conclusion, but now all of a sudden I feel like I'm thinking about handholding. Maybe I'm just wrong about this, but tell me your thoughts. That handholding has to do with simple skills, that it's sort of like a mono skill lesson, and that scaffolding is not fundamentally about building a skill as much as it is about gaining facility with a multiplicity of skills that will enable new sorts of thinking or new kinds of practice or perhaps just more complicated skills.
Right.
I
would be careful though about the handholding. About the word simple, like what are we saying? To me? I would say like a granular skill that doesn't make it like simple as in easy. Sort of non-essential. It can be very crucial, but
right,
you're looking, you're really zoning in on one thing.
Right. Yes. Good. That's a good way to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. All right. So I think the plane is landing now, Tim. This has been a great conversation. Do you, is there anything that you would like to, I don't know, dude. Typically I have heard, like when I listen to podcasts and people interview, someone else at the end, that's where they say, do you have any plugs or do you have a place where people can reach you online or, you know, like they do that sort of thing. I usually blow by that. So I don't know how they, sort of say that in a nice way or whatever, but, if you have something that you would like to share in terms of where you are and what services or whatever you offer, now would be a time that you could do that.
Okay, I'll put a plug in. So k12.thoughtfullearning.com with two L's, thoughtfullearning.
Okay.
Can get a bunch of free stuff that I think would be really helpful wherever you are in the school year if you teach writing English. 21st century skills like problem solving, critical thinking, social emotional intelligence. There's free mini lessons. We have models of student writing that you can look at and share with your students. And then we have also writing units that are free right now for the remainder of however long the COVID-19 crisis continues. Those will be free.
Wow.
So we have a lot of we're trying to be as supportive as possible because we know teachers are up against it.
Yeah. Wow, man.
Yeah.
That's, you guys are doing some good work over there. And, we appreciate that. And I appreciate your time and your friendship.
Yeah, me too. This is fun.
Yeah, this is good stuff. So, you know, you've been so supportive, especially with the poems. I can't wait for Steve to hear how a civilized person responds to.
Yeah, Steve, take it easy on Jason.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, man. All right, dude. Well, we'll have you again sometime.
All right, thanks. Backwards education.